Wow, you said it's 3 a.m. You must be lonely.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell, okay?
Okay, I'm sorry. When are we going to let the Matchbox 20 hate stop? Like,
I don't know, because I've been beating that drum since 1996, mama.
I love Matchbox 20. It's so funny that, like, all of the bands that were like that have been getting shit on for so long. But the moment that, like, Phoebe Bridgers and Maggie Rogers, like, cover Goo Goo Dolls, they're exempt mm-hmm. from this now.
For real.
I just feel like every band has been saved. It's like everyone agrees that Drops of Jupiter is a perfect song, so Train is mm-hmm. exempt. Everyone agrees that Third Eye Blind was actually really good. They're exempt. So it's like all the mm-hmm. bands of that era that made that kind of music have all gotten exemptions, except for Matchbox 20. Why?
For real.
What did Rob do to any of you people?
Rob Thomas is such a good songwriter. Put any of your faves up against literally any Matchbox 20 song and they'll lose. It's incredible. Like,
have you listened to any song of Rob Thomas's solo album? Because it's low-key good.
Oh, I think it's really good. I think the first two are really good.
Like, that first, like, solo album with all the hits on it is good.
Mm-hmm. It's great. And yeah. I think there's some bangers on Cradle Song.
I feel like it's like we all need to agree that, like, Rob Thomas is a genius. The first Maroon 5 album slaps. Mm-hmm. And Viva La Vida is the best indie rock album of all time.
And out came Talk.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
We're back from the future.
Yeah.
We took the last 2 weeks off because technical issues.
Technical issues, life issues.
Mm-hmm.
Holiday
it's been bad.
Issues.
The holidays. I've had so much to do at my house. You know, I still have like 12 pieces of iron ore that I have to mine on Animal Crossing in order for me to make the shop. I've been too busy doing that to watch any movies or podcast.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. That's why. It's because I've been playing too much Animal Crossing. But we're back.
We're back.
We're back from the dead. We're here. Welcome to Straight People Movies. This is a podcast where we two gays get together. We watch a movie made for straight people and we ask the question, hasta la vista, baby?
Baby.
Baby?
Baby.
Can we do Austrian accents? It's like doing an Italian accent where it's not racist.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
So it's like, don't go anywhere.
Come with me if you want to live.
I'll be back. I have to do it slow to really get all the like the mouth movements properly.
It sounds like on Duolingo whenever you can't understand what they're saying, and so you hit the slow speech version, and it's like, yo, quiero comprar un manzana.
Manzano. I like that. You're like, what the fuck are they saying? And it's like, quiero.
You're like, okay, it's too slow. I can't keep up with
quiero.
This.
Quiero.
My name is Dylan Garcia.
I'm Kirk Van Sickle.
And we are here to save you from Skynet.
Guys, don't do Guys, it. Don't buy don't do it. Tesla.
Don't buy Tesla.
Don't Skynet, buy a Tesla.
It's Skynet. Skynet.
Skynet, Skylink. Y'all.
It's Skynet.
It's Skynet.
Don't do it. Watching this movie, I was like, damn, we're already here. Like,
yeah, we're here.
We're here.
Literally, I think there's a part in the movie where it's like, it's 2027.
It's like 2027, right?
Yeah.
Sick.
We're like almost there. We're almost to Linda Hamilton, sweaty, holding the gates at the playground.
I know. Oh, it's 2029, explosion. So we have 6 years.
Yeah.
So August. Not a lot of time so yeah. Left. So Judgment Day was in the night. It was 97. So we missed that already.
The gates was 97.
Yeah.
Or it already happened, and this is all a computer program.
Oh, if I have my brain in a jar, just somebody tip me over.
Oh my God, please. I think about that all the time. Like, you know, when people like just die mysteriously and you don't know, like they're like, their heart's just mm-hmm. stopped. It's because they're in the Matrix and some sort of like malfunction happened and their like little pod thing like fell off.
They're fully like they're in San Junipero and someone tripped over a cord.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the crazy part is that we're in San Junipero.
Oh my God.
Like this is like imagine how bad the world must have actually been if this is San Junipero.
Oh God. Man.
But yeah.
So that's why we are doing Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
No, we're doing Terminator 2 Judgment
Day. We're doing
it
for another reason.
Because of our king.
Our king.
Our king.
Jim himself. Big Jim.
Jim Cameron. Wow.
What an icon. Before we even get started with the movie, what a fucking legend. He's only done, 8 movies and they're all bangers?
I would like to say that we were a little ahead of the curve on the James Cameron love because I feel like for the last 10 years since Avatar came out, the first one, people have been like, James Cameron is what's wrong with modern filmmaking. And then we did a Titanic episode 2 years ago or whatever it is now. And we were like, no, James Cameron is it. He's it.
He's
actually, like, we should have known how good we had it with him. Mm-hmm. Because look where we're at now.
I know. Well, you know what I'm realizing now? So whenever we did the last James Cameron episode was also the last time that Austin faced a devastating freeze.
Oh my God.
James? What do you know? James controls the weather.
James, stop
controlling the weather. Because it's 25 degrees here in Austin right now.
It is.
And it's getting worse. How is it in California?
It is 63 degrees.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
Ugh. Speaking of California, it's so fun watching all these movies for a podcast and being like, oh, I live there.
This is my home. Have you watched Magnolia since you've moved to LA?
No, but I will say that every time I go up to the Valley for any reason, it's really like weird because I'm like, I'm in PTA land. Like this is you're PTA like, land.
Any member of Haim can jump out from behind a bush.
It's more that there's so many jokes and movies about LA that like now I get. Like there's a line in Boogie Nights. I did watch Boogie Nights and they're like in the Valley and they're like, where do you live? And he's like, oh, I live in Torrance. And they're like, and you took a bus all the way from Torrance? And I remember and I went and I literally gasped. I went, oh my God, that's so far.
I want there to be like really, if I ever made a movie, I would fill it with like incredibly specific Austin references
that
I would expect the audience to understand.
You should. It's so fun. Like for me, it's so fun. Like what did I watch that had an LA joke in it recently? Well, I mean, T2 had some, not really. Mm-hmm. It just was in LA. Well, it was kind of suburby LA, but, what was I fucking look at my fucking letterbox now. Oh, 13. We were watching 13.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, bitch. Like, when she was having a fashion emergency and they went all the way to Venice, I was like, where do they live? Because it's got to be on the West Side. There's no way. After school, Venice? No.
Well, speaking of teenagers having a bad time in Los Angeles, let's talk about Terminator 2. You want to give the girlies a rundown?
Yeah, sure. So, in honor of the new James Cameron film, Avatar, The Way of Water, we watch Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the 1991 sci-fi sequel starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, Robert Patrick, and Edward Furlong. And Dylan was a little too high while writing this to come up with a plot description this week, so here it is from Wikipedia. The malevolent artificial intelligence Skynet, Tesla, sends a Terminator... A self-driving car. A highly advanced killing machine back in time to 1995 to kill the future leader of the human resistance, John Connor, when he is a child. The resistance sends back a less advanced reprogrammed Terminator from the first movie to protect Connor and ensure the future of humanity.
Perfect.
Can we just... Okay, so first off, I think as a child, I didn't think about the layers of time travel that this movie kind of does just right off the bat. Because I, the person that fucks Linda Hamilton to get her pregnant with John Connor is from the future.
Brilliant.
What the fuck? I literally, I couldn't stop thinking about that the whole movie. I can't even tell you what I thought about the movie because the whole time I was just like, Like, just drool coming out of my mouth, like, just trying to understand, like, how that works. Like, it's just so...
Your full primer shit.
Yeah, it's the full primer a thing, because it's just, like, so... It was always fate. It's fate. Mm-hmm. It's destiny. It's fate. The kinds of things that straight people believe in, but done yes, so well, I think.
I know. That's the thing. Watching... When I say Titanic, watching Terminator, and especially after watching... Avatar, Way of Water, I just realized that James Cameron, all of his movies are one body of work.
Yeah.
All about the transference of, like, intelligence and, like, knowledge throughout the years. Because that's basically what, like, Avatar is all about, is, like, transferring consciousness, even if it's, like, artificial, like, in the terms of, like, human avatars or, like, Avatar from, like, AWA or whatever. And, like, I was like, oh, that's kind of about, like, Titanic. Like, Titanic was this movie about the transfer of power. Terminator is this movie about, like, the transfer of a savior through time. And it's like he just views time as this continuum and not as this, like, fixed thing.
I
love it.
All of James Cameron movies are warnings to the human mm-hmm. race, aren't they?
They are.
They are yeah. warning. It's almost like Titanic is like the origin story. It's like mm-hmm. they built this ship to show off how powerful and rich and authoritative mm-hmm. they were, but nothing could stop it from sinking. Or, I mean, something yeah. did stop it from sinking. It was a giant iceberg. You know, and it's all about, like, man in its narcissism being faced with mm-hmm. actual threat, you know? And Terminator's kind of interesting because it's about us being so playing with things that we should be playing with, right? Creating mm-hmm. technology that becomes too powerful, and then we have to fight it back. We have to, like, destroy our own Frankenstein's monster. But another thing that's crazy about Terminator, another moment, is the technology used to create Skynet is from the future.
Incredible.
Because it, like, comes off of, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first movie or something. I don't know. I don't remember the first movie that well. But that's how they that's how they start building Skynet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I feel like James is just saying it's inevitable and we're going to have to suffer, but we will prevail. That's the thing about James.
Yeah. There's he loves the Earth so much. Like, all of his movies are about, yeah, they're all about that, but they're all about specifically, like, Earth fighting back. Like, the thing about Titanic is, yeah, here's this giant monstrosity boat that we built in defiance of God. Earth will destroy it.
Yeah.
The thing about Avatar, we have head of this planet. The planet itself will destroy it. Mm-hmm. And he's just about returning to the balance of nature.
Yeah. It's almost like Terminator's kind of an interesting fluke in his filmography, but not a fluke. It's that we're the return to nature. Human beings. Mm-hmm. The machines are the ones that are... taking yeah. all the power and the authority from us, and then we're like the Earth trying to fight back. So that's kind of yeah. cool. It's very humanist.
It's incredible. Very humanist. I love it. Terminator 2 rules.
It's so good.
It was incredible. This is my first time seeing it.
One of the only sequels that's better than the original, I think.
This was my first time seeing it.
Oh my God.
I know. I somehow missed it, and I was just watching it. I was just gobsmacked. Absolutely gobsmacked.
We talked about
incredible.
This off the pod, but I would love to bring it up. Something that James Cameron is so good at is you can watch a sequel to one of his movies without having seen the original and be fine.
Incredible.
Which is so important, I think, because I talked a lot during our Marvel series about my biggest issue with these Marvel movies is none of them feel like standalone movies. They all feel like a continuation or a really long episode of a TV show or something.
Mm-hmm.
But like Terminator 2, you can watch Terminator 2 without seeing Terminator 1 because he's so good at exposition. It's like insane.
He's so good. Yeah, you haven't seen Avatar yet, but I was when we were talking about Avatar at our movie club, I had brought up there's a part in Avatar in the very, very beginning where... And it was whenever I knew, I was like, oh, I'm in fucking good hands. Let's go. But Jake Sully is recapping his time on Pandora with the Na'vi. And he's like, I got so used to the language that Na'vi sounded like English to me. And the rest of the movie's in English. I'm like, you fucking genius. That's how you get around, like, subtitles and translation.
I love it.
And it was one line. And it was incredible.
I like that so much better than everyone just speaks in a British accent when we're in Europe.
Yeah,
like a movie set in France in the 1600s. Everyone speaks with an English accent.
Mm-hmm. That's Never fuck with James. James will always win.
Yeah, no, James always wins. James gets it. James knows how to pace a movie. James knows how to get you to like all the characters. James understands how to make you sympathize with the villain, sympathize with the hero, sympathize with the love interest, sympathize with everybody. Like, everyone has a character. Like, I remember at Titanic, the Titanic episode, one of my favorite episodes we've ever done, there was an end where we did a shout out to every character in Titanic, because I feel like no matter how big or small the role was in Titanic, everyone just felt like fully formed people. And that's so hard to do in a big blockbuster, like, film like this. Like, but it's like every character from, you know, John to the Terminator to Sarah, like all the side characters, like the Skynet guy and his family, like, and like the people they visit out in the desert to go get all their weapons and shit. Like, this movie is so good that it made me look past the fact that it was kind of pro-military, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely pro-militia. It's definitely pro, like...
It's pro-guerrilla warfare.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And I think what I also love about James is that every piece of the movie is important. Like, everything is set up and everything pays off. And I think
that
a lot in Titanic, in Terminator.
No loose ends. Everything that gets brought up has a point, and then it's going to have this very satisfactory conclusion.
Yep.
You leave a James Cameron movie feeling like everything has been resolved, even if there's a sequel after it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I keep bringing up, like, Way of Water, but, like, everything is, not only is everything wrapped up in Avatar, but stuff that isn't wrapped up is very clearly setting up for a sequel.
Yeah.
And so, it's either you are sent with a parting gift. No, it feels like, the party is over, but you're also sent with a parting gift.
Yeah, totally. It's like, anything that was unresolved was in the background enough that it doesn't feel like a loose end.
It just feels like, character development.
It's like everything
plot
that matters will be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah. Like, when is everyone... Wake up, people. James Cameron is the American auteur of his age group.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I'm thinking, like, in the beginning, whenever you see Skynet in L.A., like, in the present-day Skynet, and they're going to the office that has, like, the chip in it. And they're like, oh, you need two keys. And I'm like, oh, that's a fun little detail that they're having. And then it's important later.
Yes,
it's like,
exactly. Oh, yeah, like the two keys are important. I noticed that stuff, too.
It's so
every
good.
Every little thing that gets brought up. Like, when there's a... What I love about James Cameron is, like, if you see a prop, if they show a prop in the foreground of a shot or an insert, you're like, that's going to be important. It's just so satisfying to watch. And I know it's popcorn filmmaking, and maybe, like, people that, like, you know, only watch, like, Hao Shuxian films all day long are going to be like, ugh, boring. But, like... Literally, like, there's just something so satisfying about watching a movie where every single little bit of it, like, all just comes together in a way that just feels like, you just want to take a bunch of popcorn and go, in your mouth. And it's just, we grew up, I don't care, especially if you're an American millennial, it's like, there's just no escaping this kind of movie. And I feel like people that pretend like they hate big movies like Terminator 2 are just lying to themselves. I'm gonna be that girl right now. I know I hate. I say don't do this, Kirk. Don't do this. But it's true. It's like, how can you deny yourself a big blockbuster film like this? Like, it's just so fun to watch. And literally, I think it's even more fun to watch because all blockbuster films are so bad now that it's just like, it really makes you go, "Wow, we really had it all. We really had it all with Spielberg and Cameron." And not George Lucas, but the rest of them, they really had that down. And then we just fucked it all up. And it's not CGI, right? Because Avatar The Way of Water and Avatar 1 are both CGI. So it's not CGI is not the problem here.
No. And, like, this is CGI, too. Like, all the liquid metal T-1000 shit.
It's so cool.
If I would have seen that in 1991... I would have killed myself. Like, I would have been like, I couldn't handle it. I'm like, this is like a new visual thing. It's so cool.
Yeah, I think that's what's. I think James Cameron really, really kills that myth that, like, it's all CGI's fault, right? Because it's like, that's what people blame it on. They're like, oh, it's practical effects, right? Like, Nolan does practical effects and Michael Mann does practical effects. So they're the great blockbuster auteurs. But it's like, no, it's just good writing. Like, it's at the end of the day. Like, what a movie needs is to be well-written. Whatever genre or whatever it's trying to be, it just needs to do that well. And Cameron does it well.
He does it well.
The Russo brothers do not do it well. And that's why the Marvel movies are bad.
Well, it's also like, I think James Cameron is like the rare person where he's been responsible for the most expensive film of all time, like, three times.
Right.
Basically.
Which and is kind of so, interesting like, he does... to be such an environmentalist and make movies about I know. Environmentalism and then be like, my movies cost $500 million to make.
Yeah, he's like, we built our own ocean. Like, he's fucking... It's, although it's fucking crazy, apparently, and once you see Avatar Way of Water, apparently, like, none of it was, like, locations. It was all sets, which is... It was all sets and CGI, which is, like, fucking crazy when you watch it.
That is crazy.
Because it looks real. It looks all real.
That's insane. I like. I really want to see it. I almost saw it tonight, but I just got this poor little baby puppy, and I can't.
Little baby. Go. Oh, he can't go. He hasn't seen the first one. It'd be confusing.
You know what I did watch last night that I thought was like kind of bad, that everyone's What's like that? Gagging for? I watched the new like the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio.
It's like. I liked it, but it's like, it's weird. It's real fucking weird.
I like it. I don't know what it was about it. There's something about it that really turned me off. I just...
Well, it's like it's trying to be like 12 movies at once. Like, is it a musical? Is it a kids movie? Is it for adults? Is it a Nazi movie?
Yeah. It's like I was talking about it with my coworker and he was like, it's a kids movie. I was like, it's definitely a kids movie. He's like, but I heard there's like World War II stuff. And I'm like, well, yes, like that stuff is not very kids movie. Yes. But like, you'll see what I'm saying when you watch it, because it's like the Pinocchio's voice and the singing and like everything about it is so childish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just something about its tone really weirded me out. And I also didn't like love the animation in it. Like, I usually am a stop motion girl. I love stop motion. Mm-hmm. But something about like this, the basic design, like the choices made by him and everyone else, I was just not feeling it.
Okay.
And I didn't like it, which I thought was like, I was not expecting that. Like, I don't typically love Del Toro, but I thought, oh, Del Toro doing Pinocchio, like, that's like a home run. Like, I'm going to like it. But it's the same problem I have with all of his recent movies, like Nightmare Alley, Shape of Water. It's just like, it just all feels so, like, I love pretty things, but it's like, I don't know. I feel
a little too dollhousey.
It's a little too dollhousey, but then at least like a dollhousey thing like Wes Anderson has like a little bit of like a charm and humor to it. I feel like Del Toro really takes his stuff really seriously, but it all feels very like superficial to me. Like, I'm like, I don't know. Like, the point is he wanted to be a real boy. And I'm like, okay. Also, I'm tired of the Pinocchio story. There were three this year. Yeah. I heard the Robert Zemeckis one is like horrible.
Unwatchable. Yeah. I heard it's really terrible. Although the Pinocchio song, the one that he sings whenever he becomes a real boy, or not when he is alive or whatever, it was shortlisted.
Interesting.
For the song, which is crazy. Did you see all the shortlisted songs?
I mean,
for the Oscar?
Zeus told me that like half or more than half of them were all famous pop stars.
Yeah, they're all pop girlies. Like The Weeknd, Rihanna, Mitski, Selena Gomez, Jasmine Sullivan, Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, LCD Sound System all got in. But like, so did the song Ciao Papa. I just want the song from RRR to win. It's shortlisted. I hope it gets nominated.
Yeah, I heard that it didn't get shortlisted for a lot of other categories.
It didn't get shortlisted for anything else, which is crazy. Because like, the visual effects in that movie are insane. I think the sound is really vital to that movie.
I feel like here's the problem. Everyone's like, oh, if we just add more Academy members, it'll fix the problem. But it's like, no, all the old Academy members need to die, because they're the ones fucking this all up.
Yeah, all the people
the
who were like best boys.
Best picture.
Yeah, if you were a gaffer in the 90s for like, you know, fucking Snake Eyes or whatever, like, you're an Academy member still, so like, you get to still vote on
your
shit.
That
like,
person would have voted for RRR.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, that person. That person's cool as hell.
I think it's more like people that like produce like Chariots of Fire or whatever the fuck. Those kinds of people.
Yeah, the second line producer on Amadeus
is out here
voting for Eddie Redmayne.
It's so crazy that the 80s was such a cool decade for film, but when you look at the Oscars for 80s,
it has the worst.
It's insane. It's like all boring 4-hour long movies. I'm like, what was going on with people
at
the time?
It's all the worst Merchant Ivory shit. Yeah,
it's crazy. It's like the 70s are like Taxi Driver, The Godfather, like all these like classics that are like good, and then the 80s is like
Bondi.
Not to shit on ordinary people, but like ordinary people.
Ordinary people.
ordinary people, but like you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. The coolest 80s Oscar winner is Amadeus.
Yeah, Amadeus is such a fun movie because Mozart is a prissy, essentially gay boy who likes to fart a lot.
I love it. Yeah. Same. Literally me. Yeah. I'm farting right now.
back to T2.
Yeah, so I wrote, like, I will say, so we tried to record this last night, but we were having technical issues, and I was also very, very high and didn't realize it. But I wrote this, and I think it's still an interesting, like, kind of topic of interest to talk about, but, like, I like T2 as this transition film between the action movies of the 80s and the action movies of the 90s.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that.
Because, like, you have your Rambos, your Predators, your Jean-Claude Van Damme's, like that right. are very military-esque but kind of dumb bro movies that yep. are, like, definitely, like, kind of a weird response to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then you bring it to space. You bring the science fiction elements and stuff with Terminator.
Right.
And Predator. That's 91, yeah, yeah. Predators. And so then the late 90s is whatever you have, like your Armageddons, your Face-Offs, your things of that nature.
Things get interesting in the 90s, but there's also on the other flip side of that coin, and maybe this doesn't count because we're talking about maybe more American film, but the late 90s, early 2000s to me is also when we start getting really interested in martial arts more.
And I think that's like I wonder if that's like a cyclical trend of like stuff from the 70s kind of coming back.
Right, because we had their whole, like, Bruce Lee moment, Into the Dragon, mm-hmm. Jackie Chan stuff's, like, what, 80s, 90s? I mean, I guess there's a through yeah. line. But I guess to me, maybe because we lived through it, but it's like, you know, in the 2000s, you start getting, like, Crouch Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You start getting Hero mm-hmm. and House of Flying Daggers. Then you also get, like,
Rush Hour and...
Yeah, the action comedy.
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan, like, that goes back to Jackie Chan. In, like, Chinese films, right? Like, yeah. bringing action comedy to the forefront. You're right. I mean, Cameron always has, like, he loves a one-liner, and he imbues stuff like Terminator and Aliens with humor. But as we go forward, I feel like Face Off and things like that are really interesting choices, like Con Air, any Nick Cage vehicle, really, is that I think what happens is that these movies take themselves so seriously that they go into what we call straight camp.
Yep.
And they're accidentally funny, and then we move into, like, let's just actually make funny action movies.
Yeah, we just do actual comedy. It's like Shanghai Nights, Shanghai Noon, stuff like that.
Right, where there's actual fighting, though, right? Because it's like, I mean, there's, like, action comedies in, like, the 80s, right? Like Beverly Hills Cop and, like, things like that. But I feel like not with, like, actual stunts that are, like, impressive to watch. I mean, Jackie Chan's kind of, like, unparalleled, I suppose, in that sense, right?
Yeah. I know a movie club member and friend of the pod, Chris, is screaming at his speakers right now.
Yeah, he's probably like, you guys are so wrong about all these things, but that's just the way I perceive it.
I'm
going to
text from Chris.
That's the way I perceive it. Action movies, yeah, I mean.
Well, like, this also, like, it's around the same time as Die Hard, which is, like, also, like, an action movie that, like, has quips in it and, like, is funny, but I wouldn't, like, say that they're comedies.
Right. I guess what Terminator 2 stands out, because it's technically like a sci-fi film, really at the end of the day.
But all the action in the movie is so good.
It is good. I guess the best through line for me in like talking about action movies and their development is like, what is the weapon being used here, right? Because I feel like that's what changes. It's like in the 80s, it was guns. Like, it was always guns. Even Terminator guns, you know? It's like, this is a sci-fi movie, and it's still guns. And then I feel like we got, like, less... Like, I feel like guns get less interesting to people as time goes on. And then it's like we go back to the fists. We go back to the swords, you know?
Yeah. If you do get guns involved, it's like John Woo shit. Where it's, like, really stylized.
Right, or even John Wick, where most of that is also guns, but then there's actual, like, fighting in it. So it's, like, a little...
And then I think also, like, The Matrix is probably the biggest... I feel like The Matrix is... Or, like, Terminator 2's biggest, like, mainstream comparison is probably The Matrix.
I would agree. It's almost like the Wachowski sisters watched Terminator 2 and they're like, let's just take that and add 20 million times more lore to it.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie doesn't have enough backstory.
This movie doesn't have lore and it doesn't have enough philosophy in it.
Yeah.
Or sex. That's my favorite thing about the Wachowskis is just like how horny they are. Like that is like my favorite thing about them. It's like, it's so funny because have you seen Bound?
That's the one of theirs I haven't seen.
Stop everything you're doing and watch Bound. It's so good. But it's such a horny movie. And it's so interesting because it's like their first film before The Matrix. And it's just like, oh, wow. Like, I feel like Bound was like this like holler into the wind of just horniness. And then I feel like they kind of like had to take it back a notch, you know, for the mainstream. And then like Cloud Atlas and Sin Sater being like, we're going to do high octane action and orgies at the same time. And God, I love them for that. I really do. And then the Speed Racer is there as one of the greatest films of all time, just like hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Hang it. Just there. Just chilling.
Just chilling. Just being iconic in every way. Yeah.
Same.
Anyway. But yeah, I do.
Why
agree.
Do straight people love this movie?
Why do straight people love this movie? I mean.
Why?
I mean, it's all pretty obvious things, I suppose.
It's pretty obvious.
They love Arnold.
I would say Arnold. They love Arnold.
I think we talked about this in the Predator episode, but I find Arnold to be, like, asexual to me. I don't... Mm-hmm. Like, even when he's, like, naked at the beginning of the movie, it's, like, it's hot, but, like, it's hot in the way that, like, a sculpture is hot.
Yeah, he feels like an action figure to me.
Yeah,
like
it's
an actual,
he's not, like,
human...
like, actually fuckable. Like...
No.
And so, I feel like men like that, though. I feel like... They want to see a man that's like an alpha, like Arnold, mm-hmm. but they don't want to feel sexually like beta. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's where we get into trouble here. That's why so many men hate like Timothée Chalamet, because it's mm-hmm. like, they're like, what does he have that women want so badly? And it makes them confused, you know? But Arnold, they get Arnold, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's like, because he's like, he comes from like, bodybuilding,
right,
which is like incredibly asexual. Like
I agree.
It's like it looks at the human body as this like not even like thing to be admired, but this thing to be like
to behold
of almost to
yeah
behold,
like literally
exactly.
Like oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think there's a difference between like him versus like wrestlers that became actors, because their muscles and their physique is more showy and theatrical. Whereas,
but
like, Arnold is, like...
wrestlers are asexual to me, which is really interesting. Like, I think The Rock, again, a beautiful specimen of a man, but I could not mm-hmm. imagine having sex with him.
I don't know. He has, like, 5 kids. Yeah. No.
He's just also so goofy.
He's a very goofy, silly man. Arnold's goofy.
He's goofy, but like, what makes him so great is... What I love about Arnold... I think James Cameron might be one of the only directors that really understood what to do with Arnold.
Mm-hmm. And I think took him seriously, too. Because I think a lot of his movies, he is this kind of, like, this object in the movie. And, like, I think he's, like, giving a really good performance in this movie. Like, actually, like,
I feel like James Cameron plays to his strengths, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like Arnold's kind of a wooden actor, right? He's mm-hmm. kind of robotic. There's not, like, a lot of emotion behind his acting. He's a star. It's like the difference between like a John Wayne and a Gregory Peck. You know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. one is like an actor and the other one is like a figure. Like,
yeah,
like he's just playing himself and Arnold's kind of just playing himself. And it's like mesmerizing to behold. And I just feel like James understands that that's what he needs to do. And that's why True Lies is the greatest action comedy of all time, because mm-hmm. it's funny that they were like, we're going to make Arnold Schwarzenegger like an average man, or he's posing as an average man. And Jamie Lee Curtis has no idea that he's actually like secretly like a fucking like assassin. Like that is like the funniest. That is hilarious. And
it's
I
so
live.
Funny.
And again, James Cameron like gets it. He's like, wouldn't it be funny if Arnold Schwarzenegger like is like a secret agent and his like whole family has no idea? And it's like, how could you not know that this man isn't just some like loser like bank person? I don't know what he does in the movie as his fake job, but
does, I mean, he has a pretty like unassailable 90s run, because it's Total Recall and Kindergarten Cop both in 90,
right?
Terminator 2 in 91. He's a cameo in Dave, but then Last Action Hero, which is like an iconic movie
I love
for some
movie.
people. Beretta's Island, he's a cameo also. True Lies, Junior, Eraser, which Eraser whips. I love Eraser.
I've never seen it.
Jingle All the Way and Batman and Robin, both like, they're both like not great movies.
Is
I love Batman
and Robin.
Robin
what killed his career?
Yeah, that's pretty much is, because like after Batman and Robin, it's like End of Days, which like I don't really remember anything about, and then after that, it's just a bunch of shit that just sucks.
Yeah, End of Days was like a huge colossal flop, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one of those End of the World movies. Isn't it ironic that there was like this long string of End of the World movies before 9/11?
For real. what did we know?
But yeah, Arnold is great. Straight people love him. Because like mm-hmm. I said, I think it's a man that you can look up to, but you don't need to feel like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, you don't have to feel, like, you know when straight people are like jealous of other men? What do you call that?
Mm-hmm. Like an admiration?
Yeah, you can admire Arnold Schwarzenegger mm-hmm. because, like, I feel like in a straight guy's mind, they're like, if I really wanted to and really wanted to try, I like could look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't buy, charm. And mm-hmm. that's not really what Arnold's like floating on, right? There's a charm mm-hmm. to him, but
mm-hmm.
it's not in the forefront. It's why women love George Clooney, you know,
because mm-hmm.
it's the charm. And men are like, George Clooney, I don't get it. It's like, yeah,
that's the thing. It's like,
there's a reason men, you don't get it, Dave. You know,
women want George Clooney. Men want to be George Clooney.
Right.
But they can't.
But they can't.
How tall is George Clooney?
I bet he's a perfect 5'10".
I want to say a deceptive 5'8". 5'11".
Oh, daddy. So tall.
So tall. Him and Brad are both 5'11". I think also like this movie does, I think the same thing with like Titanic, it's very quotable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
A lot of those quotes have like permeated to, I think it's been a while since we talked about a movie that has quotability.
Yeah, it has been a while. Yeah, I mean, these are so, it's such important quotes that they've like permeated culture. And I would say that like a lot of younger people probably at this point don't even know that like these sayings come from Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. You know, you got, we already said it, Hasta la vista, baby. You've got,
yep, come with me if you want to live.
Come with
which
me.
Was in the Lego movie 2.
Come with me if you want to live.
Come with me if you want to live.
I love it.
It's so good. And I'll I think they're both, I'll be back. And yeah, James, he is an underrated quotes smith. Because his name is Titanic.
That is a great term. Coin that. Quote smith.
Quote smith.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, if you look at Titanic, that has so much like I'll never let go, I'm king of the world, all that.
I'll never
Avatar doesn't really have that though. That's the thing about Avatar.
Yeah, the first Avatar doesn't, and the new one doesn't either, I'm assuming.
No. I don't think anything that the whale says is quotable.
Aww.
The whale talks.
So it's like, as much as we love the Avatar series, do you think it touches the classic James Cameron run?
No, but I think it's a fun, they're additions to the canon. I think they're just different. I think they're two different points in his career.
Right.
Because he only has, what, 8 movies, right?
Yeah.
And like a couple, like I was into a podcast and they were talking about how like True Lies and The Abyss are like out of print and were never on Blu-ray.
That's crazy. I've actually never seen The Abyss, and I've always wanted to.
Me too.
True Lies. That movie, like I said, it rules. I think it's probably my favorite action comedy.
Hell yeah.
It's so funny. Mostly because of Miss Jamie Lee, of course.
I mean, you think she's going to win an Oscar this year?
I guess.
I think it's happening.
It's annoying. It's annoying. It's just like Laura Dern for Marriage Story. It's like, it's a good performance, but like, really? An Oscar? For that?
Especially but, like, what else did they get an Oscar for?
I know, I'm, like, being, like, you know, unfair. Because it's the problem is that they should have already won an Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think we said it before on the podcast, but she should have been nominated for Freaky Friday.
Well, here's the thing. I think Freaky Friday came out, like, what year did Freaky Friday come out?
2002, 2003?
2003. Damn it. I think that was a really good year for Best Actress. Never mind.
Let's look at that.
I wish it was the year that Reese Witherspoon won, because I feel like that was a really weak year for Best Actress.
So this is... Oh, wait. No, so I need... So the 2004 okay, so...
Oscars is what it would be.
So, okay, so, yeah, I mean, so this is Charlize wins for Monster.
Yeah, oh, so iconic. Keisha
Castle-Hughes for Whale Rider.
So good.
Diane Keaton for Something's Gotta Give. Nah. Samantha Morton for In America. Good. And Naomi Watts for 21 Grams. Yeah. Three movies that are in Movie Club.
Yeah, no, this is a really good line of, yeah. I mean.
I would take out Diane.
Yeah, for the comedic performance, just take out Diane and put in Jamie Lee.
Yeah, I think that would have been such a sick nomination, but.
But yeah, I love Jamie Lee in Everything Everywhere All at Once. I just think the problem is that there's a better supporting performance in the movie that's getting no attention. Mm-hmm. And yep. Not to sound like PC or whatever, but it's also about like a young up-and-coming like Asian actress, and it just feels a little like, really? Like the actual strongest performance in the movie is not going to get any attention. Okay.
I think it's really... How do I say this without sounding problematic? But I think it's really good that Ki Kwan is like 100% going to win the Oscar.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if the only person who won an Oscar for this movie was Jamie Lee Curtis, like, the world would burn down.
Oh, yeah.
Could absolutely. You imagine?
No, yeah, totally. Yeah, I think it's really tough, though, with Best Actress. I think Michelle could win. But imagine Michelle, Ki-Way Kwan, and Jamie Lee Curtis all winning for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That'd be fucking crazy.
That would be like if Meryl Streep, Chris Cooper, and Nicolas Cage had all won for Adaptation. A Serve.
And they should have.
And they should have. Fucking Serve. Like, I always, people real. Think that I'm crazy for this, but my favorite performance by Meryl Streep is in Adaptation.
She's incredible in it. It's
She's
unreal.
So good in that movie. The scene, there's a scene in Adaptation where, so like, in case you people have never seen Adaptation, it's a great movie. And it basically invented like the modern meta narrative. There's the whole thing is she's writing a book about this guy who's like obsessed with orchids, and
she's playing Susan Orlean, which is hilarious.
Susan Orlean, the writer Susan Orlean, who's writing a book about a guy who steals orchids, and he's quite the character. And she's like kind of like making fun of him at like a dinner party, and everyone's like teasing him. They're like, "Oh my god, he's got no teeth," and they're like making fun of him. She's like, "Ha ha ha, yeah." And she like goes to the bathroom and she closes the door. And the look on her face as you realize that she, like, feels guilty. Not only guilty about the fact that she's, like, jeering at this guy that she's actually genuinely interested in and thinks is, like, an amazing person. But also, like, that she kind of is, like, in love with him, too. It's, yeah. Like, all these, like, emotions are going on her fucking face. And it's, like, one of the few times where I'm, like, wow, Meryl's, like, turning off all the, like, fucking cogs in her brain. And she's just giving us realness.
She's real.
She's so good.
I love her for that.
But the best acted scene she's ever done ever is the breakdown sink scene in The Hours.
That's tea.
Like, yo. Yo. When she freaks out while washing those lobster, mama.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing a dinner party for a friend who's dying of AIDS, who is being mean and writes sad poetry. Yeah. We've all been there.
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
God, The Hours is so fucking good.
Fucking good movie.
So good.
The Hours is the best Oscar bait movie ever made. By far.
And it also responsible for one of the funniest 30 Rock jokes where they're in the middle of watching The Hours and I think Liz goes, "Why do they call me The Hours? I should have called it The Weeks."
Stop.
So good. Speaking of The Hours, is there anything gay about this movie? Yes, her name is Linda Hamilton.
This is why I love James. Here's another thing. Here's another reason why James is the best. There's always a butch lesbian character in every single one of his movies. He cares about the gays.
Yeah.
It's
he
like,
wants us to succeed.
It's that one chick from fucking Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Queen.
Linda it's Hamilton. Kathy Bates
Titanic. Oh, my God. Kathy Bates of Titanic.
Then
yeah.
Avatar. I mean Sigourney.
And you know who the gay male like representation is in all of his movies? Just Billy Paxton.
Zane.
Oh,
Bill. Yeah.
Just Bill Paxton. It's Bill Paxton. Every one of his movies is the gay representation.
Yep. And even in the new one, like Edie Falco is the butch lesbian, and there's this scene you're gonna fucking gag. It's the best scene in the movie. I mean, the movie's so good. But she's walking around. She has her big exoskeleton on. Like, you know, it's the kind of the same one in Get Away From Her, You Bitch. It's like that exoskeleton. Uh-huh. but she's drinking a cup of coffee out of it.
Oh,
and she has the coffee in the exoskeleton arm, and it's just like, we gotta kill those Na'vi.
The campiest thing I've read all week on the internet is that Edie Falco didn't realize that the movie had just come out. She thought it came out 4 years ago and flopped.
I fucking love her so much.
She rules. But yes, Linda Hamilton.
Incredible.
But what I love about his butch lesbian girls in his movies is that they're all straight in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like so hilarious to me. And I just find it like very lovely. I just think it's
the
funny.
Spectrum of of lesbian that he explores. But like, she's such a fucking cool character. Like,
oh,
I love her.
She's so tortured.
One of the greatest.
And mm-hmm. I think she plays a really cool character in this because she's kind of like a shitty mom in it, like in the sense of like on the outside, she's not very empathetic, very caring, but that's because she's trying to train him to literally save the world. And you can like feel that. And I think what helps us to empathize with her character, even though she can seem a little harsh or rough around the edges, is that dream sequence that we've already referenced. I mean, one of the most horrifying, I think, sequences like in film. In my opinion, I think it's so upsetting. It's so upsetting. It's so good. When she's like on fire and she's like,
yes.
It's so good. Oh,
it's so good. Jim.
So good. But yeah, Linda Hamilton, so gay in this movie. What a bad bitch. Like the way they introduce her in the movie is that she's doing pull-ups at a mental hospital. Like what
incredible.
A fucking bad bitch.
Yes. Legend,
gag.
Icon.
Gag.
I think Joe Morton, the guy who runs Skynet, I think his house, so major.
God, I
so
love
gay.
Late 80s, early 90s rich people.
Love
houses.
It.
It's like all glass windows from like
glass
ceiling
bricks
to down. It's like everything is just so like chic.
Tiered.
It's chic. I also feel like houses, I don't know, where did these houses go? Do they not exist anymore? Houses had like steps down to things.
For real.
Like, you
honestly,
would step down to, like, the couch in the living room, and you would, like,
yeah, to,
climb a couple
to
of
the
stairs
parlor.
To get to, like, another room. Like, everything has just got steps everywhere. I, like,
yeah,
love
that. Where is
that
shit?
What
I
happened
love
to that?
It. It's like, people always talk about, like, conversation pits need to come
yes.
back, and it's like, yes, it needs to come back. That's just major.
I remember as a kid, like, going to my friends' houses, and every once in a while, they would have one of those houses where, like, they just, there's just random steps to different, like, little...
Yes.
Everything was open, but, like, nooked off because of the steps. And maybe, like,
I think
maybe, like, a half wall, or, like, a chic...
Oh, I love
like,
a half wall.
Or, like, a chic divider, or something like that, you know?
I think people... I think it's the same thing with, like, cars, too, but, like, when you make these, like, big investments and stuff, like, in a house or in a car, like, you're so afraid of, like... things going out of style that like you're gonna play it really safe, and it's like, no, I think that's when you should be bold, like whenever you do have like same thing with like phones, like I think to a smaller example, like cell phones now are all so boring, like the early 2000s and like the mid 2000s, like people's cell phones were like a part of their personality.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, you had a slider phone, oh, you had a Razor,
yeah.
Oh, your phone had a full keyboard, like there's so many different like physical, tactile things that you can differentiate yourself with, and now it's just like, oh, here's the black rectangle that I stare into all day. Anyway, well, speaking of gay stuff, we have our gay recommendations where we recommend something a little gayer than maybe we just watched. There's not really a gay equivalent to Terminator 2, so I put probably the gayest movie in James Cameron's filmography, which is Aliens.
Oh, yeah. Aliens is definitely gay. Aliens is gay because all the men in the movie suck, and the women kick ass.
Yeah.
And yeah, Carrie Hinn does the impossible, which is that she plays a scared child, but you don't think she's annoying or hate her.
Also, that's the other thing about James Cameron, like, especially in Avatar, he knows how to work with children actors.
Yeah.
And, like, he's makes them not be irritating or, like, also, like, you never, like, worried. I mean, like, you're, like, worried from, like, in the movie, but it's never, like, oh, I can't believe they made this child do this thing.
Right. It's not birth.
Like, it's not birth. Yeah, there's never a part where you're like, yeah, yeah. Whenever the youngest Na'vi gets in the fucking ceremonial bath with Neytiri, it's real, real dicey. No, James Cameron, the way he works with kids is really cool, and I like.
I agree.
That.
Even Edward Furlong in Terminator 2, we haven't really talked about him, but like, other than the fact that he kind of talks like this, he's great in it.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic.
He's like,
he feels like an 11-year-old.
You don't say affirmative. You say All right, dude.
You say cool, man, or whatever.
Cool, man. Hasta la vista, baby. I love it. I love him in this.
He's so good. Yeah, everyone's really good in this movie. Yeah, yeah, watch
Aliens.
I like
the part where he's like, yeah, my mom's a total loser. Actually, no, your mom's a bad bitch. Don't listen
yeah,
to your
do you know who the fuck
parents.
She is? She's Linda Hamilton.
But yeah,
she's
Aliens
Sarah Connor.
Is a gay movie, I think. I think that's fair. Alien is straight. Aliens is gay.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Alien is a horror movie. Aliens is an action movie. Alien is straight. Aliens is gay.
And Alien 3 is bisexual. The
exactly.
David
I hate, the one thing I don't like about Aliens is the name, because you can never say Aliens. You have to say Aliens. You have to, like, emphasize
the
S. Oh,
yeah, I love Aliens.
Aliens, you have to be like a fucking weirdo to like say the name of the movie. It's like, I hate Aliens, and then there's a modern version of that, I think, is The Purge and The First Purge, where it's like, okay, like when you say The First Purge, are you talking about the movie titled The First Purge, or are you talking about the first movie, The Purge, in the series of The Purge?
Oh my god, I
hate
that.
Hate it. It's terrible. Terrible naming conventions. Ugh.
We should name all movies, yeah. Hire us.
For real. Yeah, what did I say? Quote Smith, we're a title Smith.
We're title Smiths. So what would you have called Aliens?
Oh, like I would have called it like...
More than one alien.
The like, movie. I mean, I would have subtitled it. I would have been like Alien 2, like Rings of Saturn. I don't know if I can know. I would have done... Or like Mama's Home.
Get away from her, you bitch.
Yeah, Alien 2, get away from her, you bitch.
Love it. Love it.
Love it. All right, well, let's wrap this shit up. I'm going to go eat some shawarma. Very excited.
Hot.
It's so hot, and it's going to warm my soul, my cold, chilly soul.
You're so chilly.
It's so chilly. Oh, I'm wearing slippers right now because it's so chilly.
My feet and my hands are so cold.
They're so cold. I'm going to wear little precious gloves, little frilly chantilly gloves. All right, my name is Dylan Garcia. You can follow me on Twitter at Dylan Garcia, on Instagram and Letterboxd at Garcied, where I have not reviewed The Whale because I walked out after 20 minutes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
My name is Kirk Van Sickle, and you can find me on Instagram at Kirk _ Van Sickle, and on Letterboxd and Twitter, KRKVNSCKLE. And yeah, have a happy new year, everyone.
Happy new year. I hope your Christmases were merry and full of joy.
And I hope that your Hanukkahs were...
L'chaim.
I hope your Hanukkah Hana killed it.
I don't know.
Hanukkah.
I barely know her.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah.
And I hope your Kwanzaa was great, too.
Yeah, I hope your Kwanzaa was fantastic. All right, bye.
Bye.
And out came talk. Talk.